Right, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our session on a new perspective of patch management. Just before we get started, for my own interest, how many of you are familiar with Flexera software? Quite a few. And how many of you know Sukunya? Perfect. So, a brief introduction of myself. My name is William Melby. I'm a certified security specialist. I've been in this business now for approximately 15 years, where I spent most of my time in governance, risk, and compliance. And the past 5 years, I've been working for the Danish research company Sukunya, with a specific focus on vulnerability management. In October last year, Sukunya was purchased by Flexera Software, so now we fall under Flexera Software. And we provide the software vulnerability management piece for their application lifecycle management portfolio. So what we look at today is a new perspective on patch management. Traditionally, when we think about patch management, we think about package creation and package deployment. Now, being in this business from a Sukunya perspective for the past 14 years, some of the challenges for our customers was understanding which are the applications which pose the biggest risk before we even get to the package creation and package deployment piece. And what we could see very clearly for our customers is that they were missing the vulnerability intelligence, and that's the piece that we bring to patch management. So a little bit about Flexera, who they are. Today we have approximately 80,000 customers globally. We're in the top 200 software companies around the world. And we are providing software updates and assisting in the application lifecycle management for around 200 million PCs around the globe. We are headquartered out of the US in Chicago. We have offices in UK, where we run our EMEA operations from, as well as Denmark, Australia, as well as in Japan. And we really focus on the entire application lifecycle management process. So Flexera actually started about 29 years or so ago, I think it is, with a small product called InstallShield, and I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with InstallShield. If you've ever installed an application, you know, next, okay, that is Flexera software. So we deal with both organizations that manufacture software. We help them with creating the mechanisms to deliver that software to you and I, the consumers, and also with the licensing models which they need to use to deliver us that software. The other side of the business is in helping the users or consumers to understand their software licensing, but also help them with application readiness. So in other words, the packaging and deployment of those applications. And we're the only company that actually manages this supply chain from the producers of software all the way through to the consumers of software. So that is the core of what we do in Flexera. One of the challenges for any organization managing any piece of software is also understanding the vulnerabilities and how to patch those. So what makes us unique in this space? And why do we call it a new perspective? We bring vulnerability intelligence into the patch management process. So Sukunya as a company started off in 2002 purely from a research perspective. We have a dedicated research team, and that's still the core of that piece of business for us today, the Flexera Sukunya research team. And their job on a daily basis is to track, monitor, verify all vulnerabilities that are found out there in the public domain. So how do we do this? First of all, we released in 2003 a metacrawler, which is really just a robot, onto the internet. And this metacrawler scours the internet, but not just the internet as we know it, the one-third referenced by Bing and Google. Also into the dark web. And the dark web is where we find the hacker forums, the free marketplaces to find exploit kits. Our metacrawler goes in there and it looks for certain keywords. And there's over 1,000 searches built into our metacrawler, and it feeds back information into a funnel into our research team. And this is looked at by a researcher. So our researchers monitor this on a daily basis. They never close. They don't have Christmas. It's a 24/7 business for them, 7 days a week. Every day they're open because criminals are open every day. So we also have a very good relationship with the software vendors. If we do discover a vulnerability or any discussions around it, we will work with the vendors. We do not create the updates ourselves. The vendors create that. We just do the research work. And we will write advisories, and we will work with the vendors and say, hey, there's an error in this piece of code over here, and this is how it can be exploited. Please deliver a security patch or update for it. We're also very well respected in the research community. So we have our own in-house research team, but we work with a global network of approximately 200 independent researchers that feed us information. We will also verify that information for them and pass it on to the vendor. So let's have a look at the numbers of how much we actually see. So on a daily basis, we probably see around about 300 new pieces of information around vulnerabilities. And the reason why I say pieces of information is because when that comes into our funnel, only about 80 out of those 300 pieces of information are actually kept and passed on to a researcher. So we have one researcher that will go through that queue and dismiss probably about 220 pieces of information as being invalid or noise. We then take those 80 pieces of information and we start doing our research. And research means we start reverse engineering pieces of software to actually find out if these vulnerabilities exist. And that's a key difference when working with us, is that each piece of information is hand-touched by a researcher and verified to say whether this is a real vulnerability or not, whether this exploit actually exists or not. Out of those 80 pieces of information, we probably drill that down to about 25 advisories that we'll publish off that. And out of those 25 advisories, probably about 5 of them we would say is highly critical or above. So that's what we see from a research perspective on a daily basis. This is not a small task. We've also developed some automated processes to help us with this. And being in this business for the past 14 years, so with a specific focus on research, we also have relationships with other research houses from other vendors. We do a lot of cross-information sharing and also with some of the government research teams or CERT teams that are around the globe. So one of the things that we do is we deliver a report every year, a vulnerability review of our findings of the previous year. So this is kind of a state of the union, if you will, around vulnerabilities and what we see. So we can see here in 2016, this is from our vulnerability review, we actually published 16,000 new advisories. So these are new vulnerabilities that we saw in 2016. This is slightly up from the previous year, and we found this in more or less 2,500 products that were vulnerable. And these two figures are quite key for what we'll discuss a bit later, the number of actual vulnerabilities discovered and the number of products that they were discovered in. So what we also do is we break this down to a level where we look at it from which products were the vulnerabilities found in and from which vendors. And this is very much assisting us to understand when we look at a patch management process, where should we be focusing our attention? Now before we carry on, I have some things to give away and I just want to get some feedback from you guys. We focus very heavily on non-Microsoft and Microsoft applications in the enterprise when we're looking at patch management. Most of the enterprises that I work with have quite a robust process in place to manage their Microsoft applications or operating systems. One of the reasons for this is that for me to manage my Microsoft environment, generally I can take care of everything with either WSUS or if it's a larger enterprise, I might have Configuration Manager. So I have one single point of contact for technology to manage all of my Microsoft applications and operating systems, making my task quite simple. For me to manage the non-Microsoft environment, it's a very different scenario. I have hundreds, sometimes thousands of applications from hundreds of vendors. I need to go out to each vendor, understand which of their applications is missing an update, download the update, script it, try and push it out, see if it fails in my test lab. If it does, go back to the drawing board and then slowly roll it out to the business. So what we see is that generally organizations are maybe taking a sample set. So they'll say, well, we'll take the top 10 or top 20 most used business applications that are non-Microsoft, and we'll focus our attention on that. And normally it's what we call the usual suspects, which is your Adobe products, Java products. That's really where people are focusing their attention, right? So by quick show of hands, and I'll give some things away to the person who's got it right, Microsoft or third party, where do you think is the most vulnerabilities? Those are things that's in Microsoft, put up your right hand. Those who think it's in non-Microsoft, there we go. So one for you, sir. Sorry for throwing them. And one for you, sir. So Microsoft has been very good in securing the code of late. They've come a long way in the past couple of years of actually developing more secure code, getting the updates out to us more efficiently. And I think what's key is not so much getting the updates out to us, but let's develop some better code, right? You know, then we don't have to worry about it. So I must say, Microsoft, from our perspective, has been very good at delivering much better code in their platforms today than they were 3 to 5 years ago. What we see from our research, though, from vulnerability perspective, it's not a Microsoft world anymore. We are reliant more and more on non-Microsoft applications. In fact, last year, 77% of the vulnerabilities that we saw and disclosed on, of that 16,000 vulnerabilities, were actually in non-Microsoft applications. And as you can see from this graphic over here, the market share, so if we look at this side here, the market share of installed applications is still held by Microsoft. So there's more Microsoft product taking up space on your client or on your server than there is third party. But on the other side here, the number of vulnerabilities in the non-Microsoft, in that yellow portion over there, is far, far higher. So that poses a bigger risk to my organization than my Microsoft vulnerabilities. So where should I be focusing my attention if I'm thinking about patch management? From the data that we see, we should actually be focusing our attention on the non-Microsoft side of the house, on the third-party vendors and third-party applications, if I really want to look at this to reduce risk. And from our perspective, the goal of patch management is to reduce risk. It's not to create updates and deploy updates, right? The whole purpose here is for us to actually reduce risk. And that is where we take a different look at this. We're saying, how do we reduce risk more effectively with the resources that we have? Because it is also a resource issue. How many people do I have that can actually go out there and find for me which applications are vulnerable at any given point of time, and what is the risk rating behind that? So what is the actual attack vector that can be exploited? Is it from my local system? Is it every time a user logs onto the internet? So that's the work that we do as a research company. We look at all of those different factors, and then we create an advisory, and we publish that advisory for our customers in the portal of our products so that they can go in and see which of their applications are actually fully patched, which of those are missing patches, what is the risk behind it, so we give a criticality rating so you can prioritize behind it, and which of those are also end of life. Now, end of life products for us, from a security perspective, is just as high a threat as an insecure or unpatched product. The reason being, there's no patch available for it, there's normally no information from the vendor available for it, and if there are vulnerabilities in there, you have no way to remediate that. So end-of-life products is just as much of a threat to us as unpatched products. When we look at this from an exploit perspective, we always see in the press so much news when a new zero-day vulnerability is discovered, right? I mean, that gets the highlights, the headlines in all of the media, in all of the blogs, new zero-day vulnerability discovered. When we look at the actual number of zero days that were discovered last year, it's a handful. It's less than 10 that were discovered in all of the software that we're using. But it gets most of the media attention. What we also see is that from the time when we disclose a vulnerability to the actual time that an exploit is available on the marketplace, is roughly about 30 days. But we will have the information or the patch available within the first 7 days of disclosing that vulnerability. So we have a really good chance of patching our applications before cyber criminals actually have a chance to exploit it. So it's very important that we can understand at this point, just because I have a vulnerability in my application doesn't mean that there's an exploit that can attack it. These are very two different things. So if we can discover which applications have vulnerabilities and the vendor is supplying a patch for that, we can then reduce the risk of cyber attack in a very, very large way. The key here is to have the right information to understand which applications do I need to be looking at and have the patches so that I can actually deploy them. So on this chart you can see here, this is when the actual exploit or the vulnerability was discovered. The lowest threshold or the lowest penetration that we saw from an attacker's point of view was in this period over here, so roughly a month and a half before we saw any real attacks coming in. And this area here is over 2 months after the update was available. The funny thing is, if I look at some of the other research, we still see organizations falling prey to cyber criminals that are using exploits as far back as 1999. So they have applications that had a patch back in 1999 already, but they never patched it. And a lot of the times it's because it was sitting somewhere, they had no visibility of it. It was a system that was used on some legacy equipment. Nobody was looking at it, and that's why they fell prey to it. So over here, it's more or less the same scenario, but this is just on a smaller subset of software. This is actually from a Verizon report, and they kind of looked at, again, the top five portfolio of a certain customer set that they were looking at. So they're having your Adobe, Microsoft, Oracle, Apple, Mozilla, OpenSSL. And you can see here in this example through their research, this paper was released this year. So again, it's looking back at 2015 results. On the bottom line here, these are 0 days, and we can see they only discovered 3 0-days. But these three probably got a lot of press. And again, if we look at the time scales between when a patch was available versus the actual exploit in the wild, we're looking at anywhere from a 20 to 60 day period. So it's not just us saying this. All the research houses that are out there are delivering the same information, that there is a gap between when we discover a vulnerability to when cyber criminals exploit it. That gap is anywhere from 30 to 90 days. The patch is available, 80% of patches are available within 24 hours of us discovering a vulnerability. 80%. And in fact, this year, if the trend carries on the way it has for the first 10 months, we will look at it at being around about 85% of patches being available by the end of this year. But last year, about 80% of patches were available within 24 hours. So, one of the misconceptions with a lot of organizations is that today we still have a cyber criminal who sits in a very dark basement somewhere with a crazy t-shirt and a lot of soda pop bottles in front of him targeting your organization in a cyber attack. It's just not true anymore. That's not the world that we live in. Everybody is vulnerable to an attack. One of the key reasons for this is exploit kits. It's an automated tool, very sophisticated piece of software. Anybody can manage it. A kid with no experience can manage it. It's like playing a TV game. So I've taken some information that was actually research done by a company called Talus. They're a division of Cisco Securities Division. And these guys are cyber forensic auditors. And they looked at something called the Angler Exploit Kit. Now, how many of you have heard of the Angler Exploit Kit before? So some of you are familiar with it. I'll give you a little bit of background into these guys. So Exploit Kit is basically a piece of software. It's a tool that can be used. You put in an IP range. There's different ways to do it. And it will automatically go out there. It works on a database of vulnerabilities. And what cyber criminals do is they will go to a website. And the top two most compromised websites, and this trend has been like this for the past 5 years since I've been looking into this business. Daily news sites and religious sites, those are the top two most compromised sites around the globe. They're considered to be trusted sites by us, the users, right? So we go there for our daily news, and you have your little flash banner advert running in the background. That space is controlled by the advertising company, not by the news company. It's outsourced to a third party. What cyber criminals or hackers will do is they will attack the website, they will place some malicious code into that advert. So when a user, without clicking on anything, is just viewing that and a flash banner ad or little newsreel is running, piece of code is transferred, and within seconds your machine is compromised if you have, for example, an unpatched flash player or browser running. So that's really just a simple way of how these exploit kits work. So 2015, we had something called the Black Hole Exploit Kit, and then Angler kind of took over from that. But what I want to show you here, and these guys at Talus, very smart technical guys, they went in and did some forensics with law enforcement. They looked at the Angler Exploit Kit and actually got onto their servers, and the whole objective here was to dismantle it and find the catch the criminals behind it. So these numbers here provided by Talus are actually from records which they got off their servers. So the number of targeted victims per day was about 90,000 that they were targeting. Of those, the exploits on a single day, about 10%, so 9,000 of those actually got exploits sent over to them. And about 40% of those exploits that were served actually compromised machines, right? And two major things here that they were looking for to deliver ransomware was the one thing, and then keyloggers was the other thing. But 62% of the business here is to deliver ransomware. So I don't know if any of you have ever seen what ransomware looks like when it comes onto your computer. I've worked with our research guys. It's quite funny. So they took me through a process in some of their research where they actually showed me, they went onto a site that they knew had ransomware onto it, was compromised. You get a little banner coming up saying, hey, we're locking down your computer and you have X amount of time to pay us X amount of money. Otherwise, you'll not have access to any of your files. What we have to remember is that these are criminals, so there's no guarantee once you pay the money that they'll actually unlock your files, right? The next thing here, though, was even more interesting when I saw this presentation for the first time, because those are all very well statistics, technical statistics, but where it really became interesting for me was to understand the business or commercial side of this. So this is the part of their business that delivered ransomware. And we can see there the percentage of ransomware that was actually paid. So this is where people actually paid to have things unlocked. The next one we can see the average, and this is in US dollars, right? So the average is between $200 and $500 that was paid. So total ransomware collected per server per day was around about $19,000. And if we look at the bottom line, what was the gross income to these cyber criminals on a daily basis was around about $95,000, which gives us an annual figure of $34 million. My first thoughts when I saw this was, I'm in the wrong business. But it gives us an idea of what we are up against. Now, I mean, Flexera, we 800 employees, very strong business. We're not spending that kind of money on protecting our infrastructure. I don't know many organizations of our size that are. And if you think about this process and the technology behind it, so when I spoke to the guys from Talus, you know, they were telling me that these guys had such sophisticated security on their servers that, you know, they were comparing it to some of the global banks, saying, if banks had secured their environment like this, we'd have safer banking. So these are very smart guys with a lot of cash behind them. And this is the challenge for us, right? This is really what we're up against. So bearing that in mind, we need to really focus our patch management efforts on what are the cyber criminals looking at? What are the guys that we're trying to defend against? What are they doing? 80% of the exploits in this kit attacks third-party vulnerabilities. Only 20% is looking at Microsoft. So we need to go where the bad guys are. Right, so here's a little piece from Gartner where they're looking ahead into the future. And, you know, I can almost pull up any report from any one of these research houses, and they all say the same. So Gartner says by the year 2020, 99% of vulnerabilities exploited will continue to be ones known by security and IT professionals for at least 1 year. Which begs the question to me is, why are we not doing anything about it? And it just brings me back to that fact of how immense the manual task is. If you have to go in and try and track all of these things by yourself, look at the public sites, look at the other sources that are available to you to get information on which applications we need to patch, that task is immense. So what do we do as an organization is we look at what is the software vulnerability management lifecycle from a patch management perspective. The first point for us is vulnerability intelligence. So that's where our research comes in. That's where we do the heavy lifting. That is where we have an intelligence database today that's considered to be the largest vulnerability intelligence database that exists, because we have these different sources of gathering the information. So the one thing that we do is we track all of the public sources. So anywhere that you're going today, we are already tracking that information. We also track over 10,000 vendors. So for you to put together a team of people doing this is going to be nearly impossible from a resource perspective. As I said, we've also built some automated tools that are already assisting us. But that's the key behind our process of complete patch management, is having that intelligence database available. The second step for us would be asset inventory. If we do not understand our asset inventory, what software do we have deployed? Where is it deployed? Then we are lost. We're chasing a moving target. So it's very clear to us that if you do not understand which software is running where, you're pretty much lost in the process already. The task will become so much more difficult. So we have the research, and then we have the asset inventory, whatever data, whatever tool you use to collect that. You have to combine those two before you start your process. The next step for us is mitigation. So when we think about patch management, again, most organizations think about package creation and package deployment. But what happens if there is no updates available? So this is another side of our business where we alert customers to say, hey, there's actually a vulnerability, but there's only a partial fix. What we see is that a patch will be delivered by the vendor, but if we do not put our research behind it, sometimes we get a situation where we said, hey, this application has four vulnerabilities in it. The vendor delivers the patch, but they only cancel two out of the four vulnerabilities. And we all get a notification, hey, hot fix coming out 3 days because this didn't really fix the problem. This just creates extra work for us. So what we do in our research and in our advisories, we will notify our customers to let them know this is only a partial fix. You need to look at some other way to actually secure this application before the vendor delivers a complete patch, a security patch that will fix all four of the vulnerabilities. So when we talk about mitigation, we also talk about remediation. So we remediate it with a patch, but we want to mitigate the risk. We want to understand, can we actually patch this application? And then the final piece for us is verification. We need to have a verification step. Well, how did that get there? We need to have a verification step in our process. So once we have our asset inventory, we can then compare that to our intelligence database to let us know which are the applications that have vulnerabilities, which are the patches that we need, and make that available to our customers. They can then implement a remediation or mitigation strategy around that based on the risk profile of their installed applications. And then the final step there is to verify. Has the patch been installed correctly, and have I reduced the number of vulnerabilities in my environment? So when we look at this, and I actually covered this a little bit in the beginning of the presentation around what is a vulnerability, but what we really want to look at is what is the process around it. So vulnerability management is a process in which vulnerabilities in IT are identified and the risk of these vulnerabilities are evaluated. And this is what we want to bring into any patch management strategy that we have. We want to have a defined process. Now, from our perspective, Microsoft has already given us a process, right? They've already said, hey, you need to bring this patch in, you need to test it on these machines before you roll it out to production. And what we're saying is, we just want to follow that same process. We don't want to have one process for our Microsoft applications and a whole different process for the non-Microsoft applications. And that's what we've done with our technology. We plug into Configuration Manager. So with us, you just extend those capabilities of Configuration Manager to manage all of the non-Microsoft applications in the same way that you're able to manage your Microsoft environment today. So we don't have a dual process. We have everything that we need from an infrastructure perspective. We're just putting an extra layer onto that, which is the vulnerability intelligence to identify which vulnerabilities there are, and also the non-Microsoft patches, which we make available in Configuration Manager. So if you're looking for some sources to kind of help and for inspiration on a patch management process, here are two good sources. SANS, which gives you the 20 critical controls, and they will touch all of these points in there, as well as NIST. And there are some white papers written by NIST, which also references some of the things that I've spoken about today and the technologies or intelligence that we use. But these are two very good sources to understand what would a complete patch management process look like. Not just package creation and deployment, but how do I build a process? And this takes a lot of buy-in from different business units, as well as from the management structure, because this might require some investment as well. What are the challenges, though, with these frameworks? Well, as I said, it's going to require some investment into tooling, because we need some help in this area, but it will also require alignment. One of the things that we often see is that security and operations are not aligned on this process. So security will use one tool set to identify vulnerabilities and run their reports, and then it becomes a little bit of a manual process, maybe even an Excel spreadsheet that's sent over to operations with a list of applications which need to be updated. And we want to streamline this process and have it all in one tool, and that's what we provide, is having one tool that both security and operations can work off. So I'll leave you with a sort of a closing thought here. Again, from Verizon, all the vulnerabilities are still heavily targeted. A methodological approach to patch management is more effective than expedient patching. Meaning that if we just, again, focusing on those top 20 or even top 50 applications that we considered most used business applications, it is far less effective than having the intelligence to understand which are the applications with the critical vulnerabilities that is affecting my estate today. One of the pieces of research that we did about 3 years ago to understand this part of our business was we looked at on a set of 50 most used applications in the business. Which applications were vulnerable last month, those that were highly critical and above, versus the same application set of which are vulnerable this month, and then we took it and said, right, we'll wait till next month and we'll see which is vulnerable then. So we took this over a 3 month period, and we found the variance to be 40% in any given month. So if you're tracking your top 20 or top 50 portfolio of applications to patch them to reduce your risk, at any given stage, 40% of those are not vulnerable, and those vulnerabilities are lying somewhere else in your estate and you have no view into them. So that's what I wanted to share with you today. I hope it was useful and gave you a little bit of insight into how we look at patch management. Very different to what we've seen from a lot of other vendors in that space. We have a few minutes, so I want to open up and see if there's any questions that you might have for me. Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm going to ask you to repeat that because otherwise I have to repeat it. I'll just mess it up.
So at the start, you talked about the amount of applications people use and the vulnerabilities, Microsoft and third parties. But as a developer, I run 24/7 Visual Studio and third party only, well, a couple of hours maybe, yeah. Probably less. So would you consider the duration of use when considering vulnerabilities?
Yes and no, and I'll tell you why. We need to put this in perspective a little bit. So it doesn't matter how long you use the application, it's what you're being exposed to, right? If I have, so in my I have a test lab with a few clients in that I do some things on. It's never connected to the internet. Does it matter if I have vulnerabilities in there? Not at all. So if you are a developer and you're sitting with a lab that's completely isolated, it makes no difference. If you are exposed at all to any internal or external network, it doesn't matter if you're using that application for a month or a week or an hour. It's still being exposed. But the longer period of time you're exposing that, the higher the risk. So you can think about it like you're playing sports. The longer you play sports, the more susceptible you are to injury, right? I don't know if that kind of answers the question.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Is the way you're pitching the applications, is that fully supported by the vendors itself?
Correct. So we don't develop any patches. What we do is we have a file signatures team. So there's two sides of our research team. We have the researchers who purely do the reverse engineering, the coloration, they're looking at the data, coloration of data, and liaising with the vendor, saying, hey, we've discovered a new vulnerability in your application, or you said there was a vulnerability, but we found two extras, or you said there was a vulnerability, but there's not. So they do that piece of work. The moment that we find there's a vulnerability that needs a security update, we notify the vendor, but the vendor will create the security update themselves. They will pass it back to the Secunia research team, and it goes to our file signatures team. So we do a couple of things then. We take the secure, or the patch, if you will, and the first thing we do is that we test it for any known malware. So we've created a database and an engine which can test it for known malware. And we have some data sources coming into that. Once we are happy that it doesn't contain any known malware, we will then look at the installation package. And vendors today like to sneak extra things in there, right? So toolbar, smiley faces, trial downloads, whatever the case may be. And we saw a case 3 years ago where a vendor... Yeah, I guess I can. So Adobe package, it's not much of a secret, guys, right? But an Adobe package had a Google Chrome free download installed as your browser if you weren't careful and looking at everything. But that specific version of Google Chrome actually had four highly critical vulnerabilities in it. So on the one hand, you're patching, and on the other hand, you're bringing in risk. So what we do is we actually remove all of those things. So we leave you only with the installation package, and we remove all of these extra things. And most organizations are taking some time today to try and remove that, right? And kind of disable the automatic updates and all of that. So we remove all of that extra stuff, and then in our package wizard, you can just check the box that say remove the automatic updates, remove this, but it's just a checkbox. We don't touch the actual security binary, only the installation package, so only the envelope. We don't mess with anything inside. But we test the binaries to make sure that they remediate all of the vulnerabilities. So that's kind of what we were touching on earlier when we said, if we say there's four vulnerabilities, we want to make sure that the patch actually fixes all four and it's not just a partial fix. So it's all by the vendor. It's all approved by the vendor because we don't mess with the actual binaries. You know, we're not doing anything. It's just the installation package. Once we've done that, we will also test it to ensure that it can deploy correctly. It installs correctly in the application, and we our technology integrates with WSUS, which is also back-end deployment on your configuration manager. So we test to make sure it installs correctly using the Microsoft deployment architecture, and we'll, from there we host it onto our secure servers. So instead of sending our customers out to Adobe's download site, you know, with our technology, we'll come to our secure servers where the package is pre-configured, tested for you, so it's really just a plug and play scenario that you have to go through. Pleasure. Any other questions? No? Well, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your day and have a great day tomorrow. Thank you.